Hey Houston, Conn's prices are invincible. That means prices have been cut low, as in amazingly low, as in won't be beat. In fact, we're backing it up with our low price guarantee. Invincible prices on appliances, furniture, electronics, mattresses, and more. Not invincible enough for you? How about free next day delivery on appliances, TVs, and mattresses? And payment options for everyone, whether you have good credit or building it. Visit Conn's today and find out what invincible feels like.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today, we're going to talk about customer research and how to do customer research in a nimble, agile way and still be incredibly effective, as well as how the practice of customer research is evolving in the age of AI. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Todd Horvitz, Head of Insights, Business Computing and Software at HP, and formerly at Disney, Wells Fargo, Kantar, and others. Todd, welcome to the show.
Honored to be here, Greg. Thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself as well as what you're currently doing at HP?
Absolutely. So I've been in market research for about 20 years. I've been at Wells Fargo, Disney, and then for the last 10 years at HP, where I manage commercial insights, which basically means business to business. I grew up in Boston, so you'll hear my Boston accent come through, but I've been in California. All over California, actually, for about, since graduate school.
Great. Well, so let's start off by talking about, you know, what it means to be nimble with customer research. And so can you start by explaining, you know, what that means in the context of, you know, what nimble and agile mean in the context of customer research and, you know, why this approach is becoming increasingly important for businesses?
Absolutely. To me, agility or nimbleness means responding, always monitoring, and being able to respond quickly to changing conditions in the competitive landscape, in consumer attitudes, in anything. And of course, this is important not just for research departments, it's important for companies overall. To me, the ingredients, and you don't have to have all of these, but you should have most of these, for a nimble research team are, first of all, a cultural mindset that it's okay to fail. In the name of speed, go fast, fail, iterate, test and learn kind of mindset. And then another ingredient is certainly having the right tools. We'll talk, you know, to measure changing consumer needs. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Processes to be able to ideate and develop new ideas quickly. And I've noticed in flatter org structures, especially within marketing, where oftentimes we're activating the most as researchers, a flatter org tends to give more autonomy to employees to be able to make their own decisions and therefore be more nimble and go faster. So there's a cultural component too.
Yeah. So given those ingredients, why is this so important now for businesses?
Yeah. So the speed of innovation has been accelerating. And this has been going on since before the pandemic, although the pandemic brought things along even faster. If you want a proof point of this, look at global patents, which are up 375% since 1990. Wow. Businesses, simply put, businesses that don't respond quickly will die. So what's changed in the last 30 years that has made everything go a lot faster? Most obviously, connectivity and all the devices we use to connect have enabled more access to information. It means you can find a factory or a business partner across the world that you didn't have access for. It would have to be sure luck or 20 introductions to get you there 40 or 50 years ago. All of this has broadened the labor markets, which, of course, bigger talent pool. People can find the right people to be able to move their business along. And then there's been some other market developments, such as the sort of beginnings of open source collaboration, bringing together once siloed disciplines. Design processes and prototyping have gotten faster, and there's been more VC funding. So one example of this is, as you mentioned earlier, Greg, is AI. AI research actually has sped up. And one of the reasons is all of the things that we said, but particularly researchers and academics started working together. They started sharing information. They moved out of their vacuums. And by doing that, the models got smarter, the data sets got bigger, and there's been a huge increase in AI patents and scientific papers since the early 2000s.
Yeah. And so then given all that context, some of it may be pretty straightforward, but, what are the key benefits of adopting this approach? And, given all the kind of factors that you've talked about, and I'm sure there's others as well, what are some of the key benefits that a business can achieve when having a more nimble approach to customer research?
Sure. The first two are going to seem really obvious: speed and agility. We can ask questions now and get answers within hours. That's huge. If you think about it, if you're sitting in a quarterly business review, an executive asks, why are we losing share in Germany? Now, you probably have looked at a dozen things to analyze that already, from your sales, ad spend, promotions, product availability. You can tick off 20 other things. But as researchers, we have a secret weapon. We can actually track down recent buyers, people that bought, say, Lenovo, our competitive brand, and understand why, what drove them to buy, and why didn't they choose your brand. That is huge. Again, though, it has to be done in hours, not weeks, for the business to actually react and do something with it.
Yeah.
A lesser known advantage beyond speed and agility is keeping knowledge in-house. Generally, agile methods are run in-house, meaning we will do more of the survey or focus group or culling the data ourselves versus having external agencies run everything. Now, you may say, but isn't that less efficient? It is, but I would argue keeping the data in-house, and this is what keeps me up at night, is that my vendors know more about a topic, more about my category than I do. Yeah. And keeping that knowledge in-house, it's a competitive advantage. It's our secret sauce, as our old president used to say. And again, nimble research don't necessarily mean surveys and focus groups. We'll talk about some of the other ways to do it, but it can just as easily be grabbing off-the-shelf data, syndicated data, data that you already maintain on your customers' usage patterns to quickly address a business question.
Yeah. And so, all of this sounds great and sounds like it could be implemented tomorrow, except we've all, had some experience in the enterprise and know that, there can be some potential roadblocks, even, as agile as we intend to be. So, let's talk about how we kind of, balance some of those potential challenges with all the benefits that you mentioned here. So, what would you say are maybe some of the most significant challenges that an enterprise organization would face when trying to be more nimble in customer research effort and some ideas on how they might overcome them?
Absolutely. I'll pull this from some of my own experience bringing these with my team into HP. And then also just some partner organizations that, we've sort of friendly partners that that have shared with me their own experience. First of all, you got to have the right tools. Right meaning for your budget, for your team skill set, your insights team skill set, and then for the business questions that you as a research department are most likely to answer. Why do I say that? Because corporate research departments are getting smaller. They're getting leaner. They're being pressured. Massifying AI is creating additional pressure on marketing and insights to do more with less. So you're not getting incremental headcount. You really need to look at what your team already can do. Secondly, you need a plan. If you're not clear where these agile methods versus the traditional longer, bigger, more robust research, when to use either, then your team's not going to be. Then your rest of your business is not going to be. So an agile process is not for every business question. I wouldn't use it for a go, no-go launch decision. That needs something more robust. I would use it for early concept testing. I would use it for message testing. I wouldn't use it to size demand or something that has huge risk and implications to the business and should be done using a more robust methodology. Third is internal resistance. And I mean internal resistance, not from your product teams and marketing organization or your sales folks. I'm talking about from within your research team. Why might they be resistant? Some of it can come from the fact that doing more yourself changes, the way they're used to approaching research. They may be used to leaning on agencies. And so developing new skill sets to program surveys or to use Power BI to analyze internal data streams, that may be intimidating. And you may need to offer the assurance and training to bring people up to the skill sets needed to use some of these tools.
Yeah.
Lastly, I have a watch out, which is in terms of giving access, because I've seen in other organizations that have adopted these methods that they want to bring in all their stakeholders. So the people you work with, the people you innovate with, like your product managers, your marketing managers, they want to bring them into it. Yes, absolutely bring them along for the journey. That is critical. But I would not willy-nilly just give them independent access to these tools and let them run their own research. And it's not about control. It's not about job security. It's about misusing data, which coming from a tech organization, where we like to run really fast and sometimes off of gut opinions, not always the best. It's better to, sort of manage those centrally from the research team.
Yeah, definitely. And so, I have a little less experience on the research side of things, but, having worked with enterprise orgs quite a bit on, digital transformation and other initiatives, I know the role of organizational culture and mindset can certainly have an impact. So, maybe this is a bit of a leading question, but how do you see the role of organizational culture and things in fostering this nimble and agile approach to research? And, what should leaders keep in mind to try to cultivate the right environment?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, it has a huge impact, but there's only so much you can do. My old boss used to say, control the controllables. Company right. Culture takes years to change. Microsoft, one of my hero companies, made an amazing pivot, but it took 10 years under Satya Nadella to do that. And different companies have different mindsets toward research. So you're not going to be able to change the entire organization's culture. You as a research leader, though, and as a marketer, I would argue, can make your organization more nimble in how they collect and analyze customer feedback. Any insights organization can fight for a seat at the table to share this information quickly. Again, the hard part is to change how and when and if the data has impact in your organization. Some organizations are just used to, as I said, going on executive opinions. And so that's a longer battle. But again, how you collect the information and how you share the information, that's within your span of control as a research department. I'm generalizing here, but CPG companies tend to already have this sort of agile, not only these agile approaches, but also this culture across the organization to using research to making every decision. Pepsi has a war room of real-time data, of cultural trends. Starbucks has an always-on data stream from their loyalty app. These guys are they have bigger research budgets. They carve out research and sort of already have an agile mindset in a lot of cases. It's a lot harder in other industries. But again, I want to emphasize, as research leaders, you have a lot of control to change the way you do it. And then you sort of bring others on board as they see the successes.
Yeah.
As for the how to do this, sort of my recipe, four things. One is I would have a centralized research budget. It is very difficult to bring in agile processes and approaches successfully unless you have the money within your control as a research leader to do this. Otherwise, it just will take forever and it probably won't happen. So research has to lead this. Secondly, you got to bring everybody along on the journey. So I said I don't want to give complete control and let them run the research themselves in terms of product managers or R&D teams or that kind of thing. But I want to bring them along for it. I want them to understand the benefits to the company, you know, that we talked about in terms of speed, agility, retention of knowledge and that kind of thing, and also some other benefits. And so absolutely bringing them along to understand why they're going to see changes in the way research is done and why that helps them and benefits the company overall, I think is very important. And again, you know, the head of insight sets the norms top down for the research team. So you've got to give your team permission to spend 10% of their time or whatever investigating new approaches. There's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of new methodologies out there, but they involve experimentation. Some won't work, some won't work for your company. And so you got to give your team permission to do that. And then last, I would just say you got to establish when and when not. I'm going back to what I was saying earlier around certain decisions. You should not be using agile, fast turn methods. You should use something much more robust and that unfortunately takes a little bit longer. But that's important if it's a decision that's, you know, going to have huge impact for your organization, for your customers.
Yeah. And I mean, it definitely sounds like, you know, definitely there are things that can be standardized, and yet it requires some judgment on, you know, on behalf of, you know, whether it's the leaders or the team members involved as well. And, you know, you also kind of touched on there's times to give access and there's times to bring people along and yet, you know, make sure that the right approaches are being used. When it comes to, you know, tools and technologies, what do you look at as, you know, some essential resources that really assist in this agile research approach?
Absolutely. So here's where we're going to get into some specifics, and I got a bunch of them. So first of all, on the simple but powerful side, and I already touched on this earlier, are fast turn surveys. Another way to talk about this is, or think about this is like crowdsourcing. Really quickly, I get 100 or 200. You know, people in my target customer group or target buyer group or whatever, and get their opinions. This research can help you run the business, respond really quickly. And there are loads of platforms nowadays that you, as the researcher, can buy, you know, respondents through ongoing customer panels and program your own survey. And as I said, get the results sometimes in 30 minutes to an hour. If it's a very easy consumer target, it can take a few days if it's a B2B target. But this stuff is hundreds of dollars up to about $5,000 per survey. So this is very low cost. If you know about research costs, you know, to be able to do, you know, a few hundred interviews for hundreds of dollars in a market can go a huge way. In the absence of other data, usually you're not running a business day to day or week to week, I should say, based off data. It is possible to do that. And that's where this one comes in handy. Yeah. A second methodology, and this is one I really like. We've been using, I started using this at Wells Fargo many years ago, and that is customer communities. There's some great vendors out there that do this, like C-Space and Ipsos. There's another one called Verve, an agency that does pop-up panels. These panels can be a few days or a few months, but basically you bring in a bunch of customers, they form their own community, they can have their own conversations with each other, they learn very early what they have in common, maybe they're all laptop buyers or they're all small business owners or whatever it is. And then you can do regular activities and ask them regular questions. I mean, in fact, you have to keep these guys warm and, you know, to make efficient use of the dollars for something like this, because this one is not as cheap as the first methodology I said. But this is great. And you can even do this with your own employees. One company I talked to last week has, you know, a community of their salespeople. Great source of insights, right? Your tech support team, your sales force, they have data just like your customers have data. And oftentimes it's not tapped into.
Yeah.
And then a couple of other ones, certainly co-creation is one. You can actually create products from early on and sort of develop prototypes out in working directly with your customers. So you and your customers and your PMs are in a focus group together, and you're sort of working together to brainstorm and iterate solutions. And that can be done we did this at HP with 20 new experiences we tested in 3 to 4 weeks. Wow. You can use a platform. Yeah, it's super fast. And you can kind of keep testing and learning. And many of those concepts, you know, you're going to throw out because they don't have any legs. A few, though, you're going to develop further and then validate. Ipsos Hypothesis can help you do this. There's also DIY platforms like Discuss.io and usertesting.com can do this for a few $1,000s up to, you know, maybe $50,000 or $60,000 if it's you're using an outside agency to do it. But again, it can be done very, very fast, and it's a great way to develop products quickly. And then one more I'm going to mention is social intelligence, which is a great way to, that's social media, social listening. There's lots of names for it, but it's basically monitoring millions of social conversations that are happening out there. The algorithms, actually AI has been used for about 5 to 8 years to be able to sort of underpin these. The algorithms then put these into themes, and then you can quickly find out what they're saying. What are customers saying about your brand or about your category? And this is a subscription-based, license-based, you know, tool that you can buy from Sprinklr or Digimind or Brandwatch. There's about 20 different providers that have this. And then if you don't want to do it yourself using one of these tools, a vendor like Ipsos or Material have their own proprietary algorithms, and they can manage, you know, it's an art and a science, and they can do that on your behalf.
I hope you're enjoying the first part of the show, and I want to invite you to check out another podcast from the Agile brand. It's called B2B Agility, and it's hosted by me, Greg Kilstrom. The B2B Agility podcast looks at the factors that drive success in B2B marketing, with a focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make B2B brands stand out and thrive in a competitive marketplace. You can find B2B Agility on this podcast platform or wherever you normally listen. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show. You know, you touched some on involving customers in the research processes, so, you know, you're getting more timely and relevant insights. Could you maybe talk about that a little bit more, about, you know, how to effectively involve those customers?
Absolutely. So we talked about co-creation and communities, which are ways to get your customers, you know, that are already passionate about your category, already involved in your category, to express their opinions and look at comms ideas and early products and things like that. But beyond that, one thing that I've seen that's been very successful is a customer advisory board, which we've used at HP to get feedback. So you bring in your friendly customers that have been loyal to you for a while, and you get feedback, early feedback on your roadmap, on a new channel strategy, on, you know, early design ideas, whatever it is. But you involve them. That obviously makes their engagement for you, you know, stronger, lets them know that you care about the feedback. But they also have valuable opinions that you just, you know, may not think about, and you may not get from, you know, just the sort of more stale research studies that you do. And then a fun one that I discovered, there's a company called Tongal, T-O-N-G-A-L, and they maintain a panel of creatives. And you know, think art school students, professional designers, that kind of thing. And that is the target. Their brains are wired differently. And so why not tap into that mindset to get ideas for a new campaign, even a product, a design? And obviously, there's an agreement that the IP then becomes, you know, your company's property, and they certainly can win. It's done as a contest or a sweepstakes or whatever, and they win and they get the sort of accolades while they're in school of having developed something. That's a really great way, again, for, you know, where you need an extra brain, a creative brain. I think that one is a great way to, again, involve people that already care, already think about this stuff, and put them to work for your company.
Yeah, I love it. Well, last thing I wanted to talk about was having your perspective, and, you know, certainly you've had the opportunity to work with some great brands and doing some great research with those brands. You know, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen kind of at the macro level, you know, when you look back and think about, you know, what you've seen over your career?
Yeah, I'm going to date myself, but I will tell you, I think the biggest change is the separation between work and life. And this goes beyond research. I'm talking about work in general, which, you know, we've been studying a lot over the last couple decades. In the late 90s, when I started my career, when you went on vacation, you did not bring your laptop. If you even had a laptop, often you had a desktop.
Right.
And now, I mean, there is no vacation, especially with a U.S. mindset, working mindset. You know, I miss the days when you'd have to go to an internet cafe and use webmail to check your email. Otherwise, you were completely detached when you were on vacation. And look where we are now.
Yeah.
we've come a long way or not.
Right, right. You can look at it either way, right?
You can. But I do miss those days. Those were the best vacations of my life. You know, and then looking at research, I mean, research has certainly changed. It's been democratized. I mean, you probably heard that as a theme through a lot of my responses today. We're more empowered. We can, even a startup can collect their own data using some of these panel tools like Suzy and Quantalope and other ones that just allow you to buy, you know, customer lists and deploy surveys with just point and click. That's a good thing. Of course, the bad side, as I've said, is that untrained people can then be misusing data. But, you know, again, it's brought down the costs and brought up the speed of research, which is a good thing. The other thing, I think the field of insights has become more diverse. That is only positive. A wider range of perspectives benefits everybody. I learned that firsthand when I hired a team of fresh out of school graduates. One was fresh out of the military, and they had completely different perspectives. They weren't sort of trained by traditional research agencies or marketing agencies and sort of instilled on how to do things a certain way. They were much more open to learn. And, you know, and nowadays we can pull from a national talent pool, right? Not just force people to live near an office. And all of that, I think, has been positive for the, you know, types of points of views and the range of views that you have on your team.
Yeah, yeah. So last question before we wrap up here. I feel like, you know, I kind of have the running joke here of we touch on AI on every episode, no matter what the topic is. So let's go there. You know, what are your thoughts and experiences here with, you know, recent developments in, you know, greater usage of AI, you know, whether it's predictive, generative, or, you know, all of the above, as well as others, you know, what role has AI already played, and, you know, where do you see it going in the near future?
Yeah. So I'll talk generally and then I'll talk for customer research. Generally, most companies are in investigation mode. They're running experiments, but for the most part, they don't, you know, I wouldn't say they have AI producing products or, you know, generating marketing copy for the most part yet. IT departments actually are the ones that have been using it the longest. They've been using it for predictive analytics, for identifying hardware failure, right, ahead of time, identifying security threats, new security threats ahead of time. And they've also been working with you know, chatbots for early, you know, customer service calls, and then it might be passed to a rep. So they've been, you know, IT in general has been in the center of it, but most companies, I would say, were sort of, when this massified, when it became sort of well known that this was going on, most of them were like, oh my God, we gotta start investigating. Let's, you know, deploy dollars. And we joke that among our IT buyers, and they've told us this too, by the way, the best way to get dollars is to say either security or AI. And suddenly the CEO is giving your IT team dollars. So generally in companies, they're in early stage. Now, for customer research, you know, and workers in general started using this very quickly. I mean, they immediately saw the benefits to being more efficient and automating the boring parts of their job. And so in research, I'm using it to get up to speed, and my teams are using it to get up to speed really quickly on a topic, because we cover a lot of subcategories. We're using it for brainstorming. I can ask questions in a certain way and then try another way, and it sparks new ideas. We're using it for response choices in a survey. So if I ask a question, I'm like, oh yeah, that's another way people could use PCs. And then I put that into the question in the survey, and I get a, you know, it's like having an extra brain. There are even some agencies that are using it for, for first drafts of surveys. And then, of course, there's, images and for presentations and all those. Again, just the stuff you were doing already, just being able to do it, faster.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What about some of those things, kind of in the works?
So then there's if we take it a couple of years out, again, speaking for customer insights here, one area will be that we're experimenting with now, but we haven't really seen success, is mining old data. So mining, think focus group transcripts, videos of customers talking about your product or their pain points, all the survey data that you've collected over the last several years, and then being able to ask questions and have, get an automated smart response back based on all the research you've collected in the past. That kind of, call it knowledge management and just additional data mining, I think will become a lot more, will bear fruits. We haven't really seen early on where it has, but I really believe it will in the next couple of years. Just the chatbots were not developed for this purpose. Second, really cool, Ipsos and is working on this as well as Material. And I thought this was really neat, which is using chatbots to imitate your personas, right? We all have segmentations that we use, and there's Christy, who's a creative professional. And imagine being able to talk to Christy and ask her questions and say, so what frustrates you when you use, hand cream or whatever?
Yeah.
And or workstation, I guess she's a creative professional. It's probably more relevant. So, you can ask her questions about her attitudes and behavior. And then I think 2 to 3 to 4 years out, you're going to see AI, bots, beings, whatever you want to call them, conducting actual interviews, conducting actual one-on-one in-depth interviews with customers. And imagine the scale. You could do 500 interviews in 2 days if you had it being done with a bot that, say, is set up to match the profile or the, of the respondent that they're talking to sort of build that rapport. So if you look at Replica and what they do, think about, with bots that can kind of be your friend or confidant or therapist, you could have them a similar, face on a screen that, whose lips move, reading you or asking additional follow-up questions and probing in a customer interview as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing with that is, I think AI gets a lot of flack and sometimes rightfully so for bias being introduced and everything. But sometimes I think we forget about, if you have a human interviewing you, there's a facial, express or a micro expression or, there's all sorts of things that might, humans are not, humans have bias as well. So it's kind of an interesting way to actually level set or level the playing field, so to speak, as far as, the interviewer, I guess you could say.
That's really smart. I totally agree. And I'll tell you a really quick story. Very early in the 70s, there was a program called Eliza that was actually is one of the first chatbots. And it was developed, I think, by a German Austrian professor. And anyway, when he would experiment with this and have, people in his office, he had his secretary try it out. She asked him to leave the room because she was telling intimate things. It would just, all it was doing is parrot back questions that, things that you said as a question. So it wasn't very sophisticated, but back then it was like having a conversation, and they, people's scripts are, okay, I'm having a back and forth conversation. Therefore it's like a human, and they were opening up a lot more according to some of the people he talked to, than they would to their therapist. So I think there's also just, we would divulge more and sometimes maybe even feel more comfortable, doing interviews with an AI versus a human. But yes, you're right. Humans have to be part of the process, at least for the time being, for any of these methodologies we're talking.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining. Again, I'd like to thank Todd Horvitz, Head of Insights, Business Computing and Software for HP, for joining the show. You can learn more about Todd and HP by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GregKilstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides,
covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.